Hi, good afternoon everyone. Today is July 31st, 2009. This is Rajiv Khanna for immigration.com. It's a community conference call that's being recorded. This does not create an attorney-client relationship. It doesn't mean that we've agreed to represent you. Your call is being recorded. Keep your identity confidential because other people can hear who you are. Let me answer a question that was being asked before we went into the recording mode. I thought it was an important enough question. The question was, I am a green card holder, and I want to go to India for 8-9 months. What is a good way for me to do it? And what I had advised was that apply for re-entry permit, download form I-131, read the instructions, understand what that is all about. Also download form N-470, read the instructions, see if that applies to you. This is the law. The law is, if a green card holder steps outside USA, even for one day, with the intention of never coming back, abandoning their permanent residence, their green card can be taken away, even for one day. However, if they have not abandoned their permanent residence, they could leave for less than 6 months without too many questions asked. But if they go away for more than 6 and less than 1 year, then questions can be asked and will be asked. If they go away for 1 year or more, they will lose their green card automatically. And then to reclaim their green card becomes very difficult. Either they have to reapply for the green card all over again from the very beginning, or they have to go to the local consulate where they are and apply for something called returning resident permit. And a returning resident permit is only given if the consulate is convinced that the person lost their green card for no fault of their own and because of some very good reasons. Okay? This is the way it works. Now, typically, if you're living for less than 1 year to take care of a family member, why should I go through the re-entry permit formalities? And the answer is, it's just safer. It's just safer. Do it that way. And make sure you plan for this. The way it works is you file the re-entry permit paperwork. And I'm not advising you to do this without a lawyer. I'm not advising that because there are certain legal issues that are best handled by lawyers. You can do it if you have time to read and learn about it, but best to get a lawyer involved in this. So once you apply for the re-entry permit, you will, after several weeks, get a biometric appointment for it. You have to go get your fingerprints taken, then you can leave USA. You don't have to wait for the approval of the I-131. The I-131 approval, the re-entry permit approval, can be sent to you either to your US address or even to the consulate near your home. Like if you're going to Chennai, it can be sent to Chennai consulate, and you can go pick it up at the consulate. Okay, that's the way it works. Vaijanti, you can hit *6 on your phone to talk with me. *6. Press *6.
Thank you, sir. That kind of explains what I need to do. Thank you.
Good. You're welcome. Good luck. All right, folks. I'm going to get started with the conference. This was just a pre-conference question. So let me start with the questions that we have today. The first question is from PRV, a question on green card. Currently holding an H-1B from A, company A. Also have an EAD. Spouse recently got U.S. citizenship. So they want to know whether they should continue with the employment-based green card or they should start family-based green card. Well, first of all, I think you should start a family-based green card. It's definitely more secure. It is definitely, well, not definitely, but probably going to come quicker than the green card through employment. The more important issue is, can I file two different 485s? And the answer is, I do. I know that INS doesn't like it, but I do. And another interesting thing is, INS has said that, and this also happened to a client of ours just recently, it can also happen that you can file the I-130 and use the existing 485 for adjustment of status. So even the employment-based 485 can be converted to family-based. However, nutshell, how would I do it? I would probably file a family-based 485 as well, okay? And I would refer the existing 485 in the family-based green card stating that I have another 45 pending through employment-based. At the same time, I would send a letter in my employment-based cases saying I have filed another 485 through my family-based, spouse-based green application. So in other words, I would complete the record on both applications so they get linked together. That's the way I would handle this. Next question is Bob Basic 2002 EB2 with the same company. He has an EB3, he's been working with the same employer for the last 5 years, 5.5 years, and he has a 485 pending through EB3, he wants to do an EB2. The question is, can I do an EB2 with the same employer? And the answer is a guarded yes. The reason I say a guarded yes is because, remember, the entire immigration process works on good faith intention, which basically means we're not being cute with the government. We genuinely have a job. We genuinely have a second job, which is a more advanced level position, such that it requires a higher level of qualification. But if you work for an employer who only has three jobs or has three employees, it becomes a little bit difficult to understand case. So I would say yes, if there is a genuine job requiring higher levels of qualification, you can do it with the same employer, or you can change employers and go to another employer. You can carry your priority date forward, and you can do an EB2 application with the EB3 priority date. You have also asked me, how can I port the priority dates? That's your lawyer's job. Don't worry about the details. Just know that it can be done. Okay? Then the next question was, is there any risk of losing my current EB3 I-140? Yes, there is, especially if you are doing it from the same employer and that employer is found not to have the higher job available. INS could then come back and question the existing I-140 as well for several reasons. I mean, there are so many reasons I can go into, but the bottom line is, yes, there can be some jeopardy to the existing I-140 as well. Your lawyers need to assess the situation and see what works best. Can I apply for second I-140 with the same employer? The answer is yes, if it's a genuine job, etc. Is there a risk of losing my current EB3? I already answered that. If my EB2 I-140 and labor are both approved, can I file separate 45 based on EB2 I-140? Or will I have to withdraw my pending EB3 45? No, you don't have to withdraw. What you do is, when the second I-140 is approved, you interfile it on top of the existing I-45-I-140 combo. What you do is you request INS, look, I have an EB2 approval, knock off my EB3 approval from my 45 and put this new approval on top. So in other words, you are pulling switching of the existing I-140 with the new I-140, and that's called interfiling. Not a technical word, but that's the word that's being used a lot these days. So basically, what you do is you knock off the old I-140 and put the new I-140 on top of the same 45. So I think that pretty much covers it. Of course, if you lose your I-140, you also lose your 45. Sai for green card, H-1B RFE. He has an RFE for an H-1 extension. He's asking that if we can represent him. Of course we can represent you. That's no problem at all. Send us an email through contact us form. Guys, don't hesitate to call our office. We are pretty open people, you know. You can, instead of posting here, you could have just called us and saved yourself some time. We'll be happy to assist you. It's no problem. You can also call our Stanton office. The phone number is on the top of the page on immigration.com. You can call our Stanton office. Speak with Anna Baker. Anna Baker. And just say I referred you to her, and that you had an RFE that needed to be responded to, so she can discuss the details with you. Next question is RFE on I-485. This is a little complicated, and I'm not sure I can answer the entire question. This is from Ramana_Forum. But I'll try whatever I can, rest you're going to have to get back with your own lawyers. The RFE was on birth certificate, and the problem was the birth certificate was registered recently. Now, that's always going to be an issue. They want the birth certificate that was registered at the time you were born. Okay? So they sent an RFE saying, show us hospital records, medical records, school records, census records. You should have census records. you have a ration card. When you're in India, you have something called a ration card. You should have that. Your name should be on that. That's one thing you can also submit. But you have to show INS that you try to get these records and they don't exist, or you were not able to get them. So merely submitting affidavits from family members without showing that you've tried to get what they asked for, what INS asked for, that's going to be a little difficult. They might accept it, but go into what I just told you. Okay. The second part of the RFE is that you are working somewhere else, your current position and job duties, you know, all that is highly connected with your particular facts of the case. Generally speaking, if in consulting jobs, how do we handle it? You know, consulting jobs, people keep moving from one location to another. So where should we file the labor certification? The answer is, labor certification is always filed with the corporate headquarters. Okay? These jobs are hypothetically considered to be located in the corporate headquarters. So I don't know exactly what was done in your case. I have no idea. You need to get back with your lawyers on this, but the general principle is that's fine. There's no problem. Mr. Singh has a question, Singh for U.S. He says, somebody came here on a K-1, then they got married, but the marriage ended into a divorce. They got their conditional permanent residence, which expired in November. After the divorce, he returned to India. Well, the problem is if he has been gone more than 1 year, he automatically loses his green card. That's the way I see the law. I don't know of any way around that unless he can convince the consulate what the issues were, and he may not have enough time. I mean, this is a very complicated situation. He wants to come back to India, to come back to USA to apply for a waiver of his or removal of his conditional residence. But if he's been gone more than 1 year, the discussion is over already. And as far as I know, you cannot file 751 abroad in India. You have to be in USA. But, you know, I haven't researched this issue in detail. My instinct is to say that you've got to be in USA. Okay, will he be allowed to return to India while the 751 is pending? I don't know the answer to this question because I don't know whether he's going to be able to file it, even make it into USA. That's the first question. Okay. He does not maintain a residence in USA but has relatives here. That doesn't, you know, that's where the problem is. I think he's already abandoned his permanent residence. That's what it looks like to me, Mr. Singh. Next question is IMQ-7. H-1 approved, not stamped, urgent need to travel to USA. IMQ-7 is a Canadian permanent resident who lives in Canada. Her husband works in USA and travels every week. Her H-1 was approved and it's valid till September 2011. They don't have an H-1 visa stamped. The employer has not been able to place them. The present employer has offered an L-1 transfer. They need to travel to USA for an interview before the L-1 is finalized. What is the best visa option? I think a B-1 visa. I think you should go for a B-1 visa and let them know that you want to go for an interview. And the normal routine is that they should cancel all existing H-1s, all existing visas on your passport, including the H-1. But they often don't do that. They often don't do that. So if they do, you don't even have an H-1 visa stamp, so that's something you don't have to worry about. But don't worry on this account. You have an H-1 approval, that approval still stays in place. Even if you travel on B-1 and come back, that approval still stays in place. The bigger problem is, and that's just a common sense problem, when you try to go for H-1 visa stamping, the consulates can raise an objection that we don't think there is a job available for you in USA. How can an employer wait for you for 1 year to join a job? So they will probably send the H-1 for revocation. That H-1 looks pretty weak to me already. But merely applying for a B-1 and getting a B-1 does not revoke your H-1 approval. Okay, you can always go back and get an H-1 visa stamp again if you can convince INS that there was a consulate that there was a job for you. So you should apply for a B-1 visa. But just let them know you're going for an interview. If my H-1 is canceled, when I apply for visitor visa, do I have to go through the entire H-1 process again? No, you don't. If L-1 does not work out and I go for H-1 stamping, I would have delayed work for about a year. What is a good answer? Oh, wait a minute. First of all, you don't make up answers. You tell the truth. If the truth is that you were not placed, then that's the truth. Please don't ever lie to the government. There are several ramifications of it. I would rather that you tell the truth and take your chances. So the answer is whatever the truth is. Next question is guest 12. One of my family members has an I-140 stuck for 20 months with no response. They could file service requests, got the standard letters, company upgraded to premium. They said it was approved. Then we got a notification saying it might be by mistake. I don't know if there is any easy way to resolve this other than through the service request. So you call their customer service number and see if they can track down your I-140, whether it's been approved or not. That should fix it. Next question is Mehtajit, who says, I'm a Canadian citizen, laid off recently while working on H-1B, but I'm still on payroll till September 15th. Okay, do I need to apply for a change of status to B2? Yes, because you don't automatically, just because you're a Canadian citizen, does not mean you automatically fall into some good status if your H-1 is revoked or if your H-1 is over. You can go outside U.S. and come back on B2 after September, but you've got to do something about this. Is it okay if I return my I-94 while going back to Canada? Yes, you should. Do I need to return I-94 at the border to the Canadian authority or U.S.? It should be U.S. authorities. Can I stay in USA for another 6 months based on a Canadian citizen belonging to... No. You should not. That could be problematic. So just go ahead and either apply for a change of status to B2 within USA before September 15th. And the details are actually on my blog. There is a couple of entries on my blog what to do if you get laid off on H1. Your situation is the same as the rest of the world. The only difference is it's easier for you to come back. Okay? Next question is CC. Wife stuck in India, expired H-4 visa, deserted by H-1 husband. This is a very sad story. Wife was on H-4, husband basically, who is in Virginia on H-1, abandoned her. Baby was born in the U.S. She traveled to India with a 3-month-old baby who has U.S. passport. Her H-4 was to expire in September 2008. Husband stayed back and he did not extend her H-4. So now she's stuck there. She tried to get a visa. She was refused that. I'm not sure how that works out. If she made a good enough case explaining the situation, they have to let her back in on a tourist visa because she might have to come here and sue this man for maintenance, alimony, whatever it is, child support. So a case should be made. She should go back to the consulate. She should talk to them and explain to them what's going on. If necessary, you can also hire a lawyer to do this for you, send a letter out to the counselor. Or better still, if you feel you can, you should go ahead and contact a local congressman's office. Tell them the whole story, and maybe they can write the counselor. Okay, that would be the best thing to do. Your second question is about divorce. I have no idea about divorce. I have no idea how that would work. But certainly, once she's here, you can find these things out. Excuse me. I think I have me a little water. And of course, you're welcome to call our office. There's no charge for consultations like this. You can send us an email to contact us form. I'll be happy to talk with you briefly and explore options further, okay? Next question is from J.V.E. Mugunta. J.V.E. Mugunta, okay. My passport expiry is in October 2010. Visa is up to 2011. During recent trip while returning to India, I was given I-94 only till October 2010. Yeah, I know we talked about that. I've contacted CBP and they said, get the new passport and go back to India and come back. Well, that's ridiculous. Because why should you have to go back to India? You could just take a flight to Mexico or Canada and surrender your I-94 and come back with a new I-94. Okay.
the second suggestion from the CBP officer is absolutely wrong. You do not get H-1 extensions using I-539. That's the wrong. I think you should travel to the CBP office, wherever they are. Okay. You should go to a CBP office, talk this out with them, and I would probably go to the same airport where I entered. So wherever you enter, you should go to that airport, talk to the CBP officer there, and explain the situation and see what they recommend. That's what I would suggest. Okay? And I-539 is absolutely the wrong form. They are giving you bad legal advice. I withdrew my I-140 appeal, and it still shows pending.
Well,
I'm not sure what that means, because the I-140 appeal is not your application, it's your employer's application. So you can't withdraw it. It's only your employer who can withdraw it. I'm confused, but the only entry you have into INS these days is through customer service, so you can try talking with them and see if they can help you with these answers about your appeal. Next question is about from Naveed 1234. That question is very unclear. I have no idea what this means. It says, I want to know about the policy about the Thailand, that who I can solve my problem of immigration. If yes, then who can? I have no idea what you're asking me, sir. Next question is from Cher Darling. I want to know if the state of New Jersey is sick when it deals with sham marriages. All I can tell you is, a sham marriage can land you in prison for several years. It's a felony. And I don't care about which state you're in, any state you're in. If it's immigration related, you are covered by the same law when it comes to marriage fraud. So please, my advice to you is, don't do it. It's a very bad idea. Naveen 256 talks about I-140 petition from second company. If you recall, I had posted questions about I-140 from company A, appeal against the denial to retain the priority. Okay, the appeal is pending. We are trying to file an I-140 from company B. And I was wondering if A number needs to be indicated. Yes, your A number is the same. Whether you file, once you have an A number, use the same A number for all your cases. Okay, that will prevent confusion. Raghav 123 Reddy. I am a little confused about this posting. I tried going through it. Let me try it again. Came to USA in August 2004 on F1 visa. Graduated in December 2006. OPT ended in December 2006. H1B was applied for, it got denied. So they went back to school. Then they got CPT, and CPT continued. In April 2008, they tried again, but the H-1B did not go through the lottery. So they continued with the CPT until 2008. The CPT is curricular practical training. Okay. On my request, the International Admissions Officer extended CPT till December 2009. Okay. I applied H-1B again in April 2009. It got denied, because there was no inquiry letter. 5 year F1 expires on August 1st, 2009. Can I still stay? You can only stay in USA as a student if you are going to school full-time or have something like an OPT. You cannot stay just because your visa is valid. You have to maintain status. You may want to talk to your international students office, and they can evaluate for you how long you can stay. Can I go for F1 stamping to a country like Canada or Mexico or Bahamas? The answer is yes, you can. But they have the option of sending you back to your home country for the visa stamping. Is there any other option other than F1 status? Well, there are lots of options. Go through the various visas that are there. I shouldn't say there are lots of options. I should just say there are options. But whether or not they apply to you, that's a different issue altogether. I also wanted to find out how the EB-5 category of green card works. I think you're talking about investment. Investment is you have to invest $500,000 in a backward area or $1 million in a regular area and create 10 American jobs, create or preserve 10 American jobs. If you apply to something called an investment trust, there are some of them approved by INS, it's about 15, 20 of them, I think. Some of them are state-owned. You can then, you don't have to worry about then the 10 American job requirement. You just have to put down $500,000. But the problem is then your money is not being invested by you. It is being invested by somebody else. And in today's economy, I don't know how far I would trust those people. Last question. Mother is also visiting America. She's planning to extend her stay for a few more months. What is the procedure? I-539. Read the I-539, but also bear in mind that consulates typically don't like people extending their visa status. But if in her case, she just needs to attend a marriage in October or November, I think 3 months extension is reasonable. And what reason can I give? Give the truth. Let's give the truth, absolutely, that she wants to stay here for getting, for, you know, attending a marriage. Give the facts, is it somebody that's that close to her? Whether she gets approved or not, if there is a good faith request, she can continue to stay here as long as you file the extension within the life of the current state. She should be okay. And it's difficult for me to predict what is going to happen in future. Normally, they don't like extension requests, but if this is a genuine request and your mom is not coming too frequently, you should be okay. Ramesh Raju 11 says that his status says document other than card or travel document mailed to applicants. What does it mean for an H-1B application? I have no idea. The first time I've heard something like this. Now, INS, as we all know, is not always accurate or perfect. So, again, as I've told other people, get in touch with them through the customer service line. Dame wants to has a general question. I'm planning to apply for H-1B. I heard that most of the cases are getting rejected or getting RFE. It is true that the standards for H-1B are being enforced a lot more strictly, but they are the same standards as always were in existence. As far as I'm concerned, whether it is an Indian company, American company, Russian company, I don't care what kind of company it is. As long as they are obeying the law and they are willing to comply with what the requirements of the law are, we are still getting approvals. Letter from the end client is often important. I have an article on this. Read it. It's on our website. It's on, also on my blog under H1. It tells you a little bit more about what we are facing these days. Not the end of the world. I checked with my office so far in the last many months. We haven't received any H1 denials. There was one denial, but I'm being told that was being reapplied. That was a denial for some minor issue or something. I don't exactly remember, but so far we are getting all approvals. And I'm sure that most of the good law firms are in the same situation. As long as you are able to demonstrate what USCIS wants you to show, you should be able to get an approval. Okay. I have to go to India later this year. If I get my H1, is there going to be a problem with visa stamp? Well, again, whatever questions INS, USCIS asks you, the same kind of questions consulates also ask you. If you have a good answer for all these questions, you should be okay at the consulate. But there are no guarantees. It can take time. There is no question about that. Okay. Next question, Monali or Manuali. I have a few questions regarding my Stokes interview. A Stokes interview is the interview that INS conducts for people who get green cards through marriage. My husband and I had our second interview on July 27th. Officer did not tell us his decision right after the interview. He said we'll get the decision in our mail after about 2 weeks. Is this common or uncommon? I wouldn't say it is either common or uncommon, but it's not something that's very unusual either. Oftentimes, you know, some cases that are very clearly approvable, the officer might approve it right away, but oftentimes they can just as often say, well, you know, we'll send you a letter. Are you going to get an approval letter? I don't know the answer to this question.
Once you do get an approval, they'll ask you to go for the passport stamping at that time. At this point, I don't think I have any suggestions other than sitting and waiting and not worrying too much. Let's see what they have to say. Okay. GOU Sikris wants to know what is good or what is the difference between working on H-1B and working on EAD. I have posted a fairly lengthy discussion on this on my blog. Please read my blog on forum.immigration.com. Read my blog. It tells you what the issues are. And I prefer H-1B even though it has work location restrictions. But if you are absolutely convinced that you don't want those restrictions, it's okay to go on EAD, I guess. Okay. And this is Muhammad that I was answering. Next question is Bhavita, H-1B denied. It's a good question. What are the implications of agreements signed between employer and employee after the H-1 extension has been denied? Well, it depends upon the terms of the contract. One thing is for sure. No contract in the world can ask you to do something illegal. Okay, remember, a contract is a matter of state law. You have to talk to the state law practitioner wherever you are located or wherever the contract says you have to. Normally, contracts will tell you this contract is governed under the laws of Arkansas. This contract is governed by the laws of Commonwealth of Virginia. So it tells you which state laws apply. You can talk to the lawyer about the contract, but generally speaking, no contract can say, you will work for me even if I don't get your H-1 extension. Nobody can do that. That's illegal. So you are excused from performance of the contract if you cannot perform it legally. Okay? That's just a general principle. Next question, immigration helper, IMM helper. I am on EAD, I-140 and labor was approved. Now I'm planning to change the employer for the full 1.5 year back. There was an issue with the title, on the job, on the label, was program analyst, and the employer gave a letter with software engineer title. INS sent a letter, there was an RFE, and the lawyer sent in response back saying this was just a title. Now, well, first of all, I want to make something clear to you. Do not ever make up facts. You have to go with the truth. If somebody is offering you an assistant VP title and the job description doesn't match that of a program analyst, don't make it happen. You have to take a similar job, or you should start a new green card all over again for assistant VP and then port the priority date over. Okay? This would be my suggestion. If these titles and job descriptions don't match, go ahead and start a new green card process and port the priority date from the old case to the new case. Or take a similar job. That's what I would recommend. Next question is from Just a Question, who says, I'm on H-1. I recently referred a friend to a consulting company. They are offering me a referral fee. Can I take the referral fee on H-1? Very tough question to answer. Very, very tough question to answer. I think you can take it. I think you can take it. The reason is, it's like winning a lottery. You didn't really do anything special for this. You didn't really engage in employment. That's my guess. I don't know personally of any law that says you cannot or can take it. I mean, there are arguments on both sides. The choice is yours. Okay, in my opinion, you can take it. Somebody else could tell you, no, you cannot. I don't know which way INS will go because they have, to the best of my knowledge, never put it in writing. HJM says, I'm a Canadian citizen. H-1B valid till 2011. Got a layoff notice. House, family, son in high school. I'm hoping my company will call me back in 6 months. I'm looking for another job on PN or H-1B. My basic needs are not to disturb my family, my son's school. Stay another 6 months in USA till things turn around, or I can find another job. Should we stay in USA as a visitor? There is no automatic transfer from H-1B H-4 to visitor. you have to go out. I just sold that to somebody else. What are my best options? I think you can come back on a tourist visa, and you should let the school issue an I-20. Maybe your son can come on F-1 visa or F-1 status at the consulate, at the border. Okay. If I take another job in Canada or work in U.S. on TN, does my H-1B visa expire? No, you can get back onto it. You can get back onto it. Let me think about this. Oh, no. If you convert to H-1, they will have to. Let me think about this. I think you should be able to just go back to the border and show your H-1 papers and come back in again. But the problem you're going to have is that the CBP could say that do they really have a job for you when you're on the job and off the job every few months? So it's a little iffy from a practical standpoint. From a theoretical standpoint, let me think about this for just one more second. I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure, but it's certainly worth a shot trying it at the border. Okay, but you definitely not be subject to the quota. That is not a problem at all. Quota kicks in only when you're outside USA for more than 1 year. Next question is Rose 11. I-94 not returned at the airport. They went out, forgot to return their I-94, came back again, got another I-94. You know, you can mail in the I-94. You can mail in the I-94. If you go to CBP or call CBP, go to CBP, Customs and Border Protection, .gov. You just call them up. They'll give you an address where you can mail your I-94 that you forgot to surrender. Not a problem. Monica has posted, Monica from our office has posted something on behalf of a user. She says, I'm currently on U.S. on L-1B. Applied for H-1B and got approved. Now I would like to move from L-1 to H-1B. You see, the problem here is this. It looks like you might have been working without authorization. Because once you got L-1 to H-1B change of status, unless the approval date is, you know, the approval is to kick in from October 1st, you have a problem because you might have been working unlawfully. This has been extensively discussed on my blog. Okay, please go to my blog, read up there on H-2L conversions and how this works. Next question is from Shy Guy, California, who says, next question is Samsung. Samsung says, I-134 affidavit of support, are we legally responsible for medical bills? Probably not. Probably not. Because of I-134, unless you sign something at the hospital or some other state law makes you in some way, I can't think of any way, that can make you responsible for somebody else's medical treatment. I-134 does not. As far as I know, I-134 does not legally bind you for medical bills. Next question is Shy Guy, California. I'm a Canadian PR holder, completed 9 years on H-1B, applied for another 3 years, but I'm on bench. I'm with the same employer for the last 5 years, and I've got two approved H-1Bs from this employer. I'm worried about an RFE and how it will impact me. Well, I don't know. It depends upon what kind of RFE it is. RFEs are a way of life. I don't see any problem with that. I'm planning to apply for EAD so that I can stay in USA. Yeah, you could do that. I don't see any problem with that. EAD is for work. You are staying legally because you are 45 years old. Can a person who... by the way, you should also read my blog under 485 entries, and you'll see a lot of information that will help you. Can a person who loses H-1B due to non-availability of employer letter use EAD and continue to stay in USA? Staying in USA is because you're 45. EAD gives you permission to work. You have said that pending 45 could be in jeopardy. That can happen if INS sends you a letter or an RFE saying provide us an employment letter. So then you must have a letter from an employer with a similar job, AC-21. Also, can Canadian PR holder work in U.S. under TN visa? TN visa is not a dual intent visa. So TN does not actually allow people to apply for a green card. So it might be a problem to get a TN if you have a green card going. next question is, Shy Guy California. Oh, no, I just answered this question. By the way, you are a Canadian PR holder. How would you apply for ATN? I'm sorry, I also didn't notice that. Only a Canadian citizen gets ATN, and that too, if you have a green card going, you won't. It'll be very difficult for you to get it. And last question, Monica had sent to me because somebody had asked a question about, they sponsored their father for a green card. He got the visa packet with the arrival date of August 18, 2009. Is it possible to request a delay? You have to get in touch with the consulate on this, and whatever they tell you, it is really the consulate's responsibility. I don't know if you can. I don't know the law off the top of my head. Normally, they give you, I think, 6 months to enter USA, something like that. Double-check with them. Also, you can go to http://travel.state.gov. There's no www here. Travel.state.gov. And look for laws. Under laws, look for Foreign Affairs Manual. Foreign Affairs Manual. That will contain the information because that's the law that the agency, that the consulate follows. Okay? Now, we have 15 minutes, a little bit over 15 minutes, almost 20 minutes, to go over any follow-up questions on whatever we have discussed. I am going to put us in presentation mode. So people who want to talk with me can hit star 6 and talk with me. Press star 6 for a follow-up question if you have one.
Hi, Rajiv. It's not a follow-up question. It's like a new question. Can I ask that?
Yeah, go ahead. So.
Yeah, I'm on H-1 and my 140 is approved under EB-2. My current salary is a little less than the proffered wage. The proffered wage is like 1 at level 2.
Okay.
Now my H-1 will be extended and the salary is still less than level 2 but it's more than level 1. Is that going to be a problem?
It's always a problem in my opinion. When an employer, this is my discussion with the Department of Labor, we've had these discussions during various investigations and they've said that to us and I think I can see the reason behind what they are talking. They say, well, how is it possible that an employee who's working with an employer for 3 years and has several years of experience is still being considered to be a level one employee for the extension? So I don't know if they're going to accept that. I don't know the answer to that question. I think they are unlikely to accept this as a level one salary.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
This is a follow-up question, Rajiv, to the I-140 premium processing issue. Post number 9, I think. It's guest 12.
Just go ahead and remind me of the facts of your case. What exactly?
It's a family member stuck with 140 for 20 months.
I remember.
And then it was upgraded to premium processing.
Right.
The Chris says that it is approved. We call the customer service.
I remember. So I told you that continue to customer service only and see if they can get you better information. You can also contact your local congressman's office or have your lawyer go to American Immigration Lawyer Association.
Oh, okay. This seems to be like a crazy thing, like whether it's approved or not is a question now, and you haven't received any notice.
It is crazy, but I'll tell you something. When somebody's I-140 has been pending for so much time, I usually start thinking that the company is being investigated. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always the case. No way is this the only reason. There can be other reasons as well. Sometimes their name could be stuck in a security check, although why USCIS does security checks before 485, nobody knows. And they should approve my I-140 no matter what my security check. Okay. But those are some of the reasons that I have seen which have caused delays for I-140. Best to go to a congressman, ALA, or try the customer service, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Good luck.
Hi, Rajiv. One just follow-up question on this. The salary thing which I just talked to you. Now, for the H-1 extension, should the salary be more than the level 2 as it was during the PD or as it is now?
No, as it is now. Always as it is.
Okay. Thanks.
The current salary. And you can't decide the levels just like that. You know, levels depend upon the job description.
Yeah, that's what was done like during the process of labor actually.
The rule of thumb is, no, labor is different, LCA is different, and perm is different.
Okay.
The rule of thumb is, level one is for entry-level jobs, which are still developmental, but
mm-hmm.
still learning the job. Level two is where they are comfortable, but they are, well, let me rephrase that. They have learned the entry-level stuff, and they are doing moderately complex work, requiring limited judgment. That's the way they define it. Moderately complex, limited judgment. Level three is where you are an accomplished professional, okay? But you are not a lead employee. And level four is when you are a lead level employee, where you actually, you know, super expert doing innovative stuff.
Okay. No, I mean, my question was like, since EB2 has a different salary, so H1 should match.
It doesn't have to be the same salary, not a
yeah. Okay, thanks.
It doesn't have to be the same salary, because H1 job and green card jobs can be different.
Okay, yeah, that's what my question was. Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Hello, Rajiv.
Yes.
Hello, Rajiv.
Yes, sir.
Hi, sir. I have a question about my H1 and my EAD. My employer has done my EAD, and it's in EB3 category, and I have 140 approved. And currently I'm in H1B, but, you know, what happens if I don't have a project anymore and he decides to, you know, lay me off, my H1 gets affected. But can I still continue with the same employer on EAD?
You can continue with the same employer on EAD. I don't see any problem with that.
Because H1B requires, you know, he pays me at least, you know, bench salary or whatever. But EAD, I think there is no such requirement, right?
There is only one problem. When you don't get paid or you are in between projects, and you are an EAD, your green card can be questioned because the job itself appears to be wobbly. INS could come back and say, wait a minute, where is the permanent job? This is supposed to be a permanent job. How is this off again, on again? So you may want to consider the option of doing an AC-21 over to a new employer.
Okay. And I mean, just in case I can, you know, gain some time, like few months at least, you know, by the time I get a new project.
Yeah.
You know, I would like to continue with the same employer because, you know, till the end of my green card processing and till the, even after, you know, after that 6 months at least.
That's
so
fine. I don't see any problem with that approach. But the only thing I would...
What happens for those 3 months? Suppose I have no project and no salary for those 3 months. What happens? Is it a big issue?
You're not, because you have a 485 pending, even if you sat at home and watch TV all day, nobody can blame you for it. The only requirement is when INS sends you an RFC, they want to make sure you have a permanent job in hand, which is similar to your labor search job.
Right.
Okay. But it's an RFC-driven investigation. It is not an investigation that happens just by itself.
Okay. So, if, for example, if they don't even notice, then
it's okay. But bear in mind, if they do notice it and you're with the same employer, they can question, is this really a permanent job? And it would be very hard for me to answer that question.
Okay, because they have not paid me, right? That's what.
Right. I think you're better off thinking of an AC-21.
So in that case, AC-21 will be a better option to go and find a new employer who can support. And what exactly they need to support my, to do AC-21?
I'm sorry, what was that question?
Do they need to financially support also in order to the AC-21?
No, AC-21 merely requires a similar job from another employer.
Okay. But no, they don't need to spend any money to have any formalities or legalities done, right?
They don't. You can spend that money.
Okay. And it's not a huge amount, I guess, right?
Depends upon the firm you hire.
All right, sir. Okay. All right, sir. Thank you so much, sir.
You're welcome. Folks, anybody else? Very nice. Do we have any other questions? Are we done? Well, excellent. Good talking with all of you. Thank you for being here, and I will see you in a couple of weeks.
Hello, Rajiv.
Yeah.
Hello, Rajiv.
Yes.
Yeah, hi. This is Vijay. How are you?
Good, Vijay. Go ahead.
Yeah. I have a couple of questions. For EB2 wage determination by Department of Labor, what is the minimum salary requirement for employee to come under EB2 category?
There is no law on this issue. Normally, you are best to assume, your best advice to assume that you'll be under level 4. Normally.
Mine is level 3, actually.
Okay. Oftentimes, if you know, if you actually follow the entire procedure they have, it could often be level 4. So the question that you have is, what level should I come under? Typically, EB2 salaries are level 4, typically. But I have seen EB2 salaries under level 2 and level 3 also.
Okay, and how much would that be, like 70K or 75K?
That question nobody can answer for you. Because what you just asked me is, how many diseases can there be? There can be a million diseases. Nobody knows the answer to that question.
Because right now, it
depends upon the job title, the job level, and the geographical location of the employee. And all of that data you can get from OER, online trade service.
Because I'm working for a consulting company, so in that case,
the company
job location.
Headquarters, normally the headquarters.
Headquarters, not the actual my client location, correct?
Normally it's the headquarters.
Oh, okay. And the next question is, thank you. Next question is, does it really, like H1 job description when my employer hired me, and also the green card job description, should they match?
They don't have to. They can offer you a different job. I hire you today as a program analyst. You're going to get your green card in 6 years or 5 years. I can think of you as being a senior program analyst or a project manager by that time. So I apply for a green card for a project manager.
Okay, great. And can I use, because I worked for company A for like 3 years. Now I'm working for company B. So if I go back to company A again, can I use those like 3 years of experience for my green card process?
Only if the job for which you are applying for the green card is more than 50% different than the job you used to do.
Okay, because when they hired me, let's say they hired me as an associate. Now, if I go back, if my responsibilities for my H1 or green card job description, you're saying that 50% should be more, meaning,
let's say... 50% different. For example,
okay.
Let's say they hire you as a program analyst, 75% of your job was systems analysis and coding, and 25% was testing. And now they're promoting you to project manager, where 80% of your job is managing projects, and 20% is in resolving or solving advanced level problems in coding and or system design, architecture, etc. These are jobs that are more than 50% different.
Okay, I got it.
First job was systems analysis and coding 75% and testing 25%. The other job is 85% providing leadership and 15% doing unusual problems in coding.
So should these roles and responsibilities come under GC job description, green card job description, or H1 job description?
Green card job.
Green card job description.
Yeah.
Okay, so how can my employer prove that when they hired me like 3 years ago, that job description is different from this?
We do that through documentation. We get the employer to give us letters, and we actually sometimes even ask for projects that you've done in the past. So, you know, you should leave this to your lawyer. Don't get involved with the nitty gritty, and don't try to do it yourself. Absolutely not.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Rajiv. Thank you so much.
Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Folks, I thought we were all done, but I guess there were a couple of lingering questions. *6 to talk with me. *6. Any questions left? All right. I think we are done. Good luck to all of you. Bye-bye.